The date is August 14th, 1975, and we're watching the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past that nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the riffraff to my Frankenfurter.
Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
And this week, we continue our Halloween movies and brought back someone who is normally on our show when we cover John Hughes movies, but not this time. We've got a whole different level of fandom. Please welcome back our friend Carly Holm.
Yay! Does that make me like Magenta and or Columbia?
Your choice, yeah. Yeah. Dealer's choice.
I mean, when I went to go see like the show in like at the Garno, I dressed up as Columbia. So I guess I will be the Columbia.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah, well, that right there tells me something that I find interesting is that, okay, you're someone that has attended it in theaters. I have seen this movie a lot of times, but have never gone to see it in person, but I have seen it live, and I know Colin hasn't seen it at all. So this is going to be a fun conversation. So this week we are looking back at August 1975 when the movies in theaters were Dog Day Afternoon, Long Way Home, The Great McGonagall, Farewell, My Lovely, and of course, our movie for today, The Rocky Horror Picture Show, which earned $2.3 million on a $1.4 million budget. Now, I do have 2 points on that. Adjusted for inflation, that's $11.3 million earned on a $7.1 million budget. And the other point, although that $2.3 million when it was in its initial run, Rocky Horror has actually earned $170 million worldwide. It's just taken 46 years to get there.
This is normally the part of the show where I would give a spoiler warning, but I feel like you could watch this movie like a million times and it would never be spoiled for you, because it would take you at least like whatever is a billion minus one to figure out what was actually happening in the movie. So we're just going to skip this part and just move on with the show.
So the tagline that appears on this poster for this movie, well, oh boy, I have several. First, give yourself over to absolute pleasure.
Very good.
Yes.
Second, I mean, I feel like I gotta sing this one. Don't dream it. Be it. That's tagline number two. Don't dream it, be it. Third up, we have dig it if you can. That is so 70s. Fourth, I have a different set of jaws. And then fifth, in the same vein as four, another kind of Rocky. So you can also tell what the big movies of 1975 were.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Sixth, I have he's the hero. That's right. The hero with 2 exclamation points. I'm getting just a bunch of blank stares from Colin.
Who's the hero in that one? Who is the hero?
Who is he?
Who is he?
That's true. Yeah. Yeah.
Is it Brad?
Is it Brad? Maybe.
Think he's a hero?
Well, he is listed as the hero in the credits, though.
That is true.
Yeah. Well, finally, one that was only on the UK poster. A musical dream come true.
Colin's like, it's my musical nightmare.
But they may not be the best descriptions of this movie, so let's go to Colin and see what he pulls out of his ass for a 60-second synopsis. Oh, this is going to be a fun one.
This is probably the hardest 60-second synopsis I've ever written. When newly engaged couple Brad Majors and Janet Weiss catch a flat tire while driving down a dark country road, they walk to a nearby castle in search of help and shelter. There they meet Dr. Frankenfurter, and from that point on, things get strange.
indescribably strange. So strange that I'm not exactly sure what happened, but there's murder, sex, and apparently aliens? And the whole thing culminates in a pool orgy. And that is your 60-second synopsis.
Oh, that's my favorite one of all time.
That's good.
So, yeah, like I said before, this is fun because I've never seen it live, but I have seen it plenty of times. And of course, my DVD does have that track where you can watch along with the audience. And that is fun because you get to hear all the things that are yelling out. I have seen the stage production of this show, though. And it was actually Frankenfurter was played by our guest from episode 7, Martin Galba. And so that was a fun experience going live. Yeah, absolutely. And so that's my kind of only experience with a crowd going there. And even seeing it live, you're still yelling things out at them and all that sort of thing. I remember one of the people that I went with actually managed to break Martin on stage because he comes out, there's the Frankenfurter song that starts off with "Whatever Happened to Faye Ray?" And the person I was with screamed out, "She was replaced by Naomi Watts!" And you could actually see Martin break on stage. He thought of it like, no one had yelled that yet so far with the show. Yeah, but I have seen this movie plenty of times. I love the soundtrack. And so, Carly, you are someone that has gone to see this in theater. What is your experience with Rocky Horror? What's your love for this movie? Because I know you were jazzed when we asked you to do this one.
Yeah, it's a weird relationship with the movie because I definitely watched it when I was way too young. Like, I think I remember I was talking to my friend about it because, of course, we all remember the show Glee and they did a Rocky Horror episode.
That's
that
true,
aired
yeah.
when I was in, like, grade 8. So okay. I was talking to my friend and I'm like, yeah, what is this Rocky Horror? Like, this sounds really cool. I want to watch this. So she said, she's like, oh, my parents have the DVD. I will steal it and let you watch it.
Okay.
Into school, she comes with this DVD and I'm like, I'm going to watch it after school one day. And just kind of like see, you know, what happened. And it was kind of one of those things where I wasn't traumatized per se, but it was like my whole just like view on humans kind of just shifted a little bit. Where okay. I'm like, this is what adult people do. This is what adults do. This, what? So it was a lot of like confusion as to like, is this real life? Like, is this actually how life is? Obviously, now I have found out and learned, no, it is in fact not, especially after hearing Colin's reaction to like, what the hell just happened here? But it was something that it was so just like campy and like over the top theatrical. I was just getting into the interest of drama at school and kind of just like in everyday life.
Yeah.
So I think that really appealed to me, this like big kind of like spectacle of what is this show. And then I also saw a stage production. Get this, it was from East Glen High School.
Wow. Now, did they alter the lyrics like they did on Glee for the high school version? Because, yeah, I know that was something that always bugged me in the Sweet Transvestite song, is that on Glee she sings from Sensational Transylvania, you know, and
yeah, they definitely changed things like that. I know, obviously, the stage play is different than, like, the actual movie in some different aspects. So they definitely stayed more true to the stage play by having, like, the usher and stuff saying science fiction double feature. I thought it was fantastically done for high school, but then I also took a step back and went, oh my God, this is something, especially as a drama teacher now, I was like, never, ever, 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 ever in my career would I ever go to my principal and give them a script and a score for Rocky Horror Picture, like the Rocky Horror Show to do in high school. Oh my God, is that just like so inappropriate? But again, it was something that I actually went to go see the show because I did the whole Cappy's review critic thing. So I actually had to sit there and critique the show after that. But I also got to delve in a lot of the like history of Rocky Horror. And especially, of course, Tim Curry comes up in that because he was Frankenfurter on stage before he was actually Frankenfurter in the movie.
Yeah.
And kind of just like going through the history of that, it kind of just sent me into like this almost this thing that's bigger than itself, and like this whole community that is so much bigger than just the show, or just the, yeah, no, I just like the movie. And of course there is a lot of, I guess, ideas behind like LGBTQ in that movie and in the show. Yeah. So kind of just having that community for people in 1975, which is definitely not now.
Yeah, groundbreaking that for environment. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So then I kind of just liked it. Grade 12 was actually when I went to go see it at the Garno.
Okay.
Which again is arguably too young to go. And yeah, we dressed up. That was the first time I'd ever thought of myself as a virgin, because that's what they call you when you don't, when you have never gone to a shadow theater performance of the show. But like, so basically they had the movie up on the big screen, but then they also had actors doing shadow theater in front. Yeah. So when the, if it's your first time going to show, they stamp you. My friend got it right on her forehead. They put mine on my chest and they put a nice big V in either lipstick or red face paint or whatever. So you, they literally ask you when you get into the theater, everybody's sitting down, they're doing like a welcome spiel, and they ask, they're like, are there any virgins in the audience tonight? And again, it's that hypersexualization of that like kind of world. And again, there's a pool orgy. Like, of course it's going to be. So it was something that we did a lot of research beforehand with, like all the things that we needed to bring, all the stuff that we were going to have to throw, what we needed to wear if we weren't wearing costumes. I think that that is also just absolutely amazing how there's been this kind of like cult following, and there's these rules that you have to abide when you go and watch it in a theater.
Yeah.
And I have not been able to go back to the Garno and see it since, because the show sells out so freaking fast.
Yeah.
Like, especially at the Garno, it's this pretty small theater, but like, it is amazing. It was like the funnest experience. I went with like two other friends, and we dressed to the nines. My one friend was Janet, my other friend was Magenta, and I was Columbia. We went all out. It was so fun. So I think it's also that kind of culture that goes around the show that makes it so enticing and so interesting to be a part of. For which Colin's like, I don't know, man. Which I think that's everybody's first kind of experience when they watch this movie. They're like, what just happened? Yep. I don't know what just happened. Yep. I don't know if I like what just happened. And then it usually, like, it did. It took me, well, especially because I was literally 13 years old. It took me a good, like, 3 or 4 times watching it. And it was one of those things where at first, where it's like, I don't know why I'm watching this again. I didn't like it. And then it, and then it was like, okay, yo, no, yes, I do actually really like it. I really like it a lot. It's a problem now. I really like it.
Well, here we go. Counterpoint. So, Colin, you've never seen this movie. Tell me, though, at your age, you are at least familiar with some of the music from this. Like, I can't imagine you've gotten to your age and never heard the Time Warp.
Well, so my I'd heard about the Rocky Horror Picture Show. My mom, who is like probably like my first movie influence, but this was another one of those movies. Like, she never let me watch it, obviously, because I was too young to watch something like this back in the day, but like, I always knew it was one of those movies I always knew that she really liked, along with like Monty Python and all that stuff.
Okay.
So I'd heard of it. I never knew what it was about. I'd only ever seen kind of the cover, and I was like, oh, it looks weird. But I never knew anything what it was about. Hadn't heard any of the music until I watched the Rocky Horror Glee Show.
Okay.
And it's really the only time I realized watching it. Yesterday, I've never actually heard the original soundtrack. I've only heard the Glee versions.
Okay.
So that was kind of my introduction to the music. And I mean, I love the music. I like it a lot. But yeah, unlike Carly, it didn't really spur me on to go and actually watch the show at that time, for whatever reason. But I mean, I don't really have a count. Like, I don't know what my opinion of... I feel like it would be disingenuous of me to give like an opinion, like, to make a judgment on the movie. I appreciate, I can totally see why it's a cult classic. I would love to go to the Garno and watch it in that kind of atmosphere. I think would be really cool. I'd like to see the stage show. It's more just like, I was watching it and I felt like, I was like, oh, I should have watched this like 3 or 4 times before I came and did this podcast, because I was just not understanding. I would be hard pressed to even tell you what the plot is, like what
Yeah. Like, I know what the characters are and like base, mm-hmm. but I'm not sure what anybody's goal is or aim.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a baffling movie. It definitely is. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that was just kind of where I left it. And I would definitely, I definitely look forward to watching it again. But even honestly, reading the plot on Wikipedia, I was like, what? Like, there was multiple times where I was like, oh, that's what that was? Like...
Well, okay, let's try to sort out your feelings here for this movie. And let's jump into the Rocky Horror Picture Show. It's directed by Jim Sharman. It's produced by Michael White, and it's written by Jim Sharman, who gets the screenplay, and of course, Richard O'Brien, who wrote the original musical play and plays Riff Raff.
Riff Raff!
I guess he's the Lin-Manuel Miranda of...
The 70s.
Okay, here's a super fan question, though, for you, Carly. Have you ever seen the sequel?
No.
No?
I have not.
Have you heard of the sequel?
I have not.
Okay. Yes, there is a 1981 movie called, I watched it today, Shock Therapy. If you think that this was a confusing movie, Colin, you gotta watch Shock Therapy, because all of a sudden it's like, what the fuck just happened? Like, I've already taken a movie that I barely understand, and now I get this. It continues on with Janet and Brad on some other weird misadventure, and a lot of the people from this movie show up, but I can't tell you what it's about. I've only seen it once. It made no sense to me. Something about a crazy nut house, an asylum, an institute, but all televised. I don't know what I watched. It was the weirdest thing ever.
Does it have like Susan Sarandon and like...
No.
The same act? No.
Oh.
No,
it's a different Brad and Janet. However, from the opening scene of Rocky Horror, the couple that's getting married, Ralph and Betty Monroe, they are in this movie.
Oh.
And they have separated, though.
In this movie.
So it's just interesting. Yeah, it's like, I don't know what was going on. But we open this movie on the science fiction double feature song with just a set of lips on screen. And I read that I'm going to have facts here, but for anyone that is diehard Rocky Horror, they probably know this shit already, but humor me because I'm finding this out for the first time and I was fascinated by it. But these are Patricia Quinn's lips, and she's the person that plays Magenta, but she's lip syncing Richard O'Brien's vocals. And the funny thing I read about this is that Patricia Quinn signed on to this movie for this song, because on stage she had played Magenta / the Usherette who sings this song. And she's like, yes, count me in. I'll do the movie, because she loves this song. And then was pissed off when she found out that she was just going to be lip syncing the song.
Just the beauty.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's like some weird contractual loophole that they pulled off where they're like, well, you're kind of singing it, but you're not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, with the opening song, I've always wondered about the lyrics, "See androids fighting Brad and Janet." When does that happen? Are the Transylvanians androids? And I am learning this for the first time.
I think that's what I always...
Because otherwise, it's false advertising, and no wonder Colin's extra confused.
Yeah, that was it.
Androids? Yeah, that right there. If they are androids, then everything is cleared up, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and, like, that was my thing. Like, maybe there was, like, another, like, android was another term for alien or something, but even, like, looking it up, android is literally, a robot with a human appearance. So maybe they are... androids, or maybe some of them are androids,
or maybe the idea of a Frankenstein monster
is
an android, but it's
I guess he would technically be the earliest kind of form of artificial intelligence.
I don't know. I like that they fill in his belly button, though, because he was created in a lab. Have you ever noticed that? They plug in his belly button?
Yeah.
I did not notice that.
That was a detail. They're like, he wouldn't have had an umbilical cord. So the actor had to wear a belly button plug.
Oh my god.
So we open the movie at the wedding, and I've always wondered why Frankenfurter, Riff Raff, Magenta, and Columbia are at the wedding. Like, is it simply to provide background vocals for the Damn It Janet song?
I think it would be interesting to see, like, an actual, like, or even an original, like, West End, like, the actual production to see if they were there as background, but then maybe to allude that they were going to be important in the story later, or, yeah, like, what that is. But, yeah, no, that always confused me a little bit, too, is, like, they definitely, with a production like that, could afford to get, like, three, not random people, but, like, three actors to do those parts.
Yeah.
Well, aren't they... It almost seems like in that song they're kind of working at the church.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that's just like their day job.
Well, see, and I did read something, and I don't know whether this is fact, but I did read that they were actually double cast because to give it a Wizard of Oz parallel. So they aren't. But see, like I said, I don't know if this is true, but so maybe they aren't the same characters, but. You know,
that's interesting because that's kind of like a thing that I got lost in this movie. Maybe it's just because I watch a lot of movies that are like, I don't know, where things aren't as they seem. But it's like I was starting to wonder if at a certain point is the movie even real events anymore, or is it in somebody's head?
Yeah.
Like, is it a dream?
Yeah.
Oh, totally. I think so, too. I had that same thought when I watched it for the first time. I'm like, is this real? Like, is this real?
Yeah.
But at what point, then, would the dream start?
I think it's at the point where Janet faints.
Okay.
When they go into the castle.
Okay. There we go. That could be it. Okay.
Or even, like, beforehand, like, even the whole, like, venture to the castle. Like, maybe even the castle itself is not real. Like, maybe they were in a car accident instead of their car breaking down.
Yeah, I was going to say,
maybe they died in a car accident. Their ghosts walked to the castle.
Yeah. Yeah. That was their purgatory.
It's a Beetlejuice movie.
Yeah.
So yeah, in our opening scene, we get our Damn It Janet song, and we get to meet our hero and heroine for the movie, Janet Weiss, played by Susan Sarandon, who had pneumonia for a lot of the shoot, and Barry Bostwick playing Brad Majors, who is our hero. And he does have a history on Broadway. He's the guy that originated the Danny Zuko character in Grease on Broadway. But oh, wow. I did read, though, that for Brad Majors, Steve Martin really wanted the part.
Oh, my God.
And I am 100% on board for Steve Martin as Brad Majors. That would have been amazing.
I'm sure that, I understand that it's like the 70s, and, you know, singing is not what it is now.
Mm-hmm.
Singing was not good. It very much surprises me to hear that he was on Broadway.
Oh, with Barry Bostwick? Yeah.
Yeah. Especially doing Grease, because, like, even you think of Damn It Janet, like, here's a ring to prove that I'm not your cat. Like, it's
yeah.
Like,
yeah, I was
going
to say, Damn It Janet is very Grease adjacent to me. And I was blown away. I was blown away by how bad they were.
But is that the point, though? I mean, that's the thing. Okay, I have become obsessed with Rocky Horror over the last few days. I've been listening to the soundtracks. I even watched that Fox one that's starring Laverne Cox. Yeah. So I've become obsessed. And as I've been going through the various cast recordings, some of them are shit. Like, yeah. You know, like, they've got the science fiction double feature song being sung in this baby voice in one of them. And it's just like, it was so hard to listen to. But there was one Damn It Janet where this sounds like opera in comparison.
I really like the Glee Damn It Janet.
Yeah.
Looking back, I actually started rewatching Glee because I'm like, I just want a piece of that childhood back. You look and you're like, Will Schuster should have been arrested. Mm-hmm. You know, that is just like the Glee was kind of like, okay, you look at it now and it's kind of just bad. It's kind of rough.
Yeah.
I think, especially for people like me, Glee was kind of that entry port to a whole bunch of different pop culture that might have been a little bit before my time that I wouldn't have gotten to experience if it weren't for them bringing it to kind of that mainstream popularity. Yeah. So, like, gotta give a kudos where kudos is well deserved, because, like, I think that was ambitious and pretty different and unique. It's not usually every day that somebody's like, let's do a Rocky Horror episode. Let's just do a Rocky Horror episode. But it's still pretty, like, you watch Glee back and you're like, this is cringy.
Well, you want to talk about Will Schuster getting arrested, though. One of the revivals of Rocky Horror Picture Show in 2010 was starring Matthew Morrison and Leah Michelle as Brad and Janet.
No, they actually dated for a while, too, which makes me just like, ugh.
Really?
Yeah.
Schuster is younger than Finn on the show, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, the actor is actually younger than the actor that played Finn.
Mm-hmm.
Really? I did not know that. I'm blown away.
Yeah, that's yeah, but I think that was something that was pretty cool to like actually get a little bit of recognition to some. Obviously it was it a little bit of a sellout? Were they doing it with the best intentions? No, probably not. They want to go, hey, this is a big culture, kind of like a culture point for a lot of different people, let's advance on that and let's make some money off of it. I don't think it was obviously for the most, hey, this is something that's really important to us, let's do it right and let's, you know, introduce a new generation to this thing. Mm-hmm. But inevitably that's kind of what happened, so
yeah,
you know, thankful yeah. for it anyway.
Well, I went into a lot of the Broadway deep dives because I was just absolutely fascinated. And so, I mean, like you said, Tim Curry originated the role, and he originated it in London, and then he was in the Broadway when it first premiered, and then he did the movie. But the other people that were from the London production were Richard O'Brien, who played Riff Raff, Patricia Quinn, who played Magenta, and Nell Campbell, aka Little Nell, who plays Columbia. But then Meatloaf was in the original Broadway production. And in the Broadway production, Dr. Scott and Eddie are played by the same person. So when Meatloaf was cast in the movie, he thought he was also going to be playing
Dr. Scott.
Yeah.
And he was kind of upset when he found out that he was only playing Eddie. But but then Jonathan Adams, who plays Dr. Scott in the movie, was in the original production, but he played the narrator, which is basically the same role as the criminologist in this movie. And the role of the criminologist over the years in all the different revivals on Broadway, it's a role that has been played by Dick Cavett, Danny DeVito, Richard O'Brien, again, Riff Raff has played that part, Stephen Fry, Anthony Head, who Colin probably knows from Buffy, Penn and Teller, Jerry Springer, and Jack Nicholson, plus Tim Curry also played the narrator in that
in the revival.
In the not so good television one, yeah.
You should say revival, the quote unquote revival.
Like, I love how, I mean, I guess in a way it's kind of like Broadway nepotism, but I love that all these people were allowed to, you know, that were brought in and they were the ones that originated the parts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for me, having Meatloaf in this movie was a huge anchoring point for me because I love Meatloaf. Like, I'm a diehard Meatloaf fan.
Yeah.
So it was good to see him and hear his beautiful voice.
It's funny, when I'm going through IMDb, I always love how if someone used a middle initial in their name or something like that, it always says on their IMDb credit that in this movie they were credited as this. So Meatloaf in this one was credited as Meat Space Loaf. Which was one of my favorite updates to the IMDb that I loved.
Oh my gosh.
Going back to Dammit Janet, I mean, we're still at the beginning here, but Barry Bostwick, he's unrecognizable as Brad to me because I am so used to Barry Bostwick in the Spin City era, you know, the old man with the gray hair. And I can't see him when I look at Brad. It's crazy to me.
Well, I was gonna, like, is this Susan Sarandon's first movie?
No, but it is her first musical.
Okay. I just realized I don't think I've ever seen her so young. It was crazy. Like, she looks like a baby.
Yeah. Well, how old are they supposed to be? Because in the scene where they're in the rain walking up to the castle, he's got a high school crest on his jacket. Like, are these a couple of 18-year-olds that just got engaged right out of high school?
I kind of assumed, like, early 20s. Like, younger than 25, but, like, probably between, I would say, like 21, 22.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought so, too, especially because they were attending other peers' weddings, like, you know. So I thought that they were probably, like, early 20s.
Okay, so he's just got that jacket around.
After all these
years. Can't let it go.
Can't let it go, okay.
in that opening scene, what is the Just Married written on the car with? I was trying to figure that out. Is it shaving cream?
I thought shaving cream.
Okay.
I'd be surprised.
It's also kind of, I
thought it was so crude for 1975, but I feel like that's kind of this whole movie. This movie to me doesn't seem like 1975. I always felt like when I think about old times, it seems like people were so classy and stuff. And then this movie is so, like, out there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I was wondering a lot because, I mean, I have seen this movie plenty of times, but this is the first time that I've really watched this movie. And I was wondering where this fell in the whole, like, history of gay rights.
Yeah.
Like, when was Stonewall and everything like that? I know the rainbow flag came out in 1978, but there is the part where Rocky is being born and he starts filling the tank with colors and it makes like this perfect rainbow on the side. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really clever. But then on the other hand, if it's before the rainbow flag, is that where the rainbow flag got its inspiration? Was because of the impact that this movie has had? How is this movie viewed by the gay community is another question I have about it. You know, there's also the pink triangle that's on Frankenfurter's smock, which is a symbol of being gay as well, which was something from like World War II. Mm-hmm. So,
I mean, I feel like maybe part of that, like, it kind of flopped in the States, but I'd imagine it seems like very British, obviously, just because that's where it originated, but it also just seems like it has that European, like, progressiveness, I guess.
European sensibilities.
Yeah, like, because I was watching it yesterday, and I was just like, oh, like, this movie came out in the 70s, and I mean, I feel like it's only in the last 10 years when people have been, like, really okay with, like, LGBTQ. Like, I mean, not even, like, there's still issues, but it's like people are more open now, and like, yeah, it seems like it's more willing to talk about it and more exposure and that kind of stuff. And like, I just always think back when I was in high school, like, if I had watched this movie, I probably wouldn't have told anybody I watched this movie, because I feel like I would have got, like, you know, it wouldn't have gone over well, just because that was kind of the time. And to think that it came out even, you know, 20 years before that, and just the little bit that I know about kind of how things were perceived then, it seems to me like I would have imagined this being a movie that people would have, like, protested at and rioted at and been like, no, we will not have this, like, sully our town and all this stuff and that kind of stuff. I don't know. I agree. I would just like to know kind of where this movie fits in, because obviously it did become, like, a big rallying point for the LGBTQ, like, community, right?
Yeah. Well, I know Tim Curry is quoted as saying that he believes the character Frankenfurter is pansexual. Now, I'm not sure when this quote is from, because I feel like the term pansexual has only become part of our lexicon in the last, you know, 3 to 5 years. And before that, I never knew the term. But that's the view he has on Frankenfurter, and that's kind of the view that everyone in the pool has at one point, is everyone's just kissing everybody. Like,
yeah.
for Carly to have her sexual awakening in grade 8 by this movie, that is pretty steep.
Well, I think that's also the pure innocence of, like, literally a child, like, 13 years old is, you're a child. I didn't even think, like, anything of that, like, when I watched it. I wasn't like, why are all these different people kissing each other and stuff like that? I knew, obviously, I was like, inappropriate.
Oh,
shouldn't
yeah.
be watching. Yeah. But I never, ever stopped to think about, like, and maybe that goes to, like, the storytelling or kind of just the plot or the idea of the movie itself. I didn't think that it was something, and again, that was, like, 2008, so it's like, it's not like I was, that was still a pretty close-minded time as well. Like, if you think about how far we've come, like, people were still throwing around, like, the F slur in school, mm-hmm. people still calling other people the R word, you know, like, those things that we know now are so backwards and kind of, like, not appropriate. Like, those things were still, you know, very much normal and accepted as normal, and, like, kind of just like, oh, it doesn't matter if you say that, it's not going to offend anybody.
Yeah.
So I didn't, you know, again, I thought, I was like, Shauna better not come home soon, because I think she's going to not like me watching this, inappropriate.
Yeah.
But it never ever crossed my mind that, like, oh, that's weird. Like yeah. all of them are just kissing each other. I don't get it. Or even, like, the double bed scene where it's, like, Brad and yeah. Janet mirrored in bed. Like, I
yeah.
didn't think anything of it except for, like, how did he pull off that kind of disguise?
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, teenage Sean thought nothing of the what would she think if she caught you like this? But teenage Sean was all about, oh, she's dancing and her nipples are showing. You know, that's what teenage Sean was all about. And then you're in the pool and it's like, come on, let's see some more nipples.
Yeah.
Everything else was just right over my head. Mm-hmm. I was laser focused on boobs.
It was something, I don't know, again, maybe that just attributes to the power, kind of the environment of the movie, but, like, it was never, ever seen as something, like, yeah, again, I was like, I just saw a boob. I shouldn't be seeing a boob. I know mom's not going to be happy if I watch something that has a boob in it. But I think it all contributed so well to the, like, to the actual, like, vibe of the movie. Like, it was nothing ever that was just, like, so out of left field that you're like, oh my god, why is this here? Yeah. Like, it all kind of just seems like a normal part of that world.
There's some part of me, because I saw this at a fairly young age as well. I don't think I was quite 13. I think I was more around 15 when I first saw it. Does us seeing this movie at such a young age, do you think it might have shaped an open-mindedness towards the things that are depicted and things that we now accept as normal in everyday, you know?
I definitely think so. I think that being, and I think it's something that's really great that is kind of coming up and evolving now. I think there's maybe a little bit more, again, love the movie, but maybe there's a little bit more tasteful ways that we can expose young people to these kinds of acceptances and kind of not tolerances, but being welcome and inviting to every type of person. Mm-hmm. And, like, even again, working in a school, there's so much more resources out there. There are books, like, when I walk through a library, there's books with parents that are both moms or parents that are both dads or yeah. kids that are transgender. And again, kind of like opening up that dialogue of, like, it's okay to be different. And it is okay if that is something that you maybe aren't quite coming to terms with, or maybe you are, or maybe you have family members who are part of this group of people, or you have friends that you can support in some way. Like, I personally never had that kind of, like, oh my god, am I, you know, queer? Am I bisexual? Am I, you know, I never personally had one of those things, but I think yeah. it also made it more accepting to friends who might be going through the same thing, or coworkers that I've met that had that have been trans or have been gay or kind of any part of that LGBTQIA plus spectrum. Mm-hmm. And I think it really paves a good kind of way for kids today. Again, maybe in a little bit more taste than Rocky Horror.
Yeah.
I, like, absolutely adore the film. But I think, yeah, I think, long story short, I think it definitely does aid to, like, that exposure breeds kind of acceptance. Yeah. Of, like, okay, this is what's happening.
Well, I know that, I mean, I love the show Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and unfortunately the last season just aired.
Yeah.
But they brought it to a pretty good conclusion, and I actually just binge-watched them all. And there is a scene where we get a beautiful make-out in the rain between Captain Holt and Kevin. And I was watching it thinking, I think this is the longest that they've ever showed a gay kiss on network TV. And I thought, well, this good. Like, this is
finally,
it's on a normal place now. Like, it's not hidden. It's not on cable. It's like, this is network TV and you're showing these two characters that love each other. Okay, finally. And
yeah,
that might be the more tasteful way to do it, though,
is
between these two men on this show compared to
Sex aliens.
it's
exciting to see that things are finally coming to fruition like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I never ever felt like when I was watching Rocky Horror that I was, like, different, even for, like, not engaging in those things. Like, yeah. Again, personally, like, that's not any part of my identity. It's not something that I strongly personally identify with, but I respect and understand it. But I still found that I could enjoy the movie and I could enjoy what was happening and I could still kind of indulge, I guess, again, this whole thing of give yourself over to absolute pleasure and like understand that, like, is this tasteful? Absolutely not. Yeah. Is this crude? Yeah. Is this like, is this kind of a movie that I would sit down and watch with my mom and dad on a Saturday night? Absolutely not. But I like it. And it's fun.
Yeah.
And I think even though as it's so very topical, like it's very campy, it's very like over the top dramatic, but there's still a lot of lessons to learn as well, which I also liked. I was actually going to, on the headstone in like the very beginning of the movie, the headstone says, "Be just and fear not." I actually wanted that for the long time to like actually get like a little like gravestone and get that tattooed. Be just and fear not. And then I was decorating my art classroom the other day and I have just like a smaller bulletin board. And I was like, oh my God, I could put that on the bulletin board. But then when the kids asked me, oh, Miss Holmberg, where is that from? Then I would have to tell them it's from the Rocky Horror Picture Show. And then I could just already imagine like the emails or phone calls that I would get being like, you encourage my kid to watch the Rocky Horror Picture Show. So I was like, man, gotta pick a different quote. Even though it's good, I have to pick a different quote. I can't put that on my board. But yeah, even just like little things as simple as that. Be just and fear not.
Yeah.
It's like shown for maybe like, I think they do a zoom into it for maybe about 5 seconds. And even since like the first time I watched it, I was like, that is fabulous. That's amazing. Oh, I love that quote.
Even watching the Laverne Cox one, it was, you know, they did have rainbow flags on the walls and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and so it's like they leaned into that for the update for 2016. With the Transylvanias, we definitely get a lot of different kinds of people, and that's definitely where any diversity that we have in this movie comes from.
Yes.
But man, they are not the best at keeping up with the choreography, that's for sure. A couple of them are just outright terrible. Now, Colin, with Big Trouble in Little China, neither of us knew whether that was supposed to be a comedy or not. This one, though, you at least got that they were going for a B-movie feel, right? Like, I hope.
Yeah, like, it seemed to me whatever it was part of the, like, motif. Like, that it was, it seemed intentional, not like it was just a side effect of, like, poor budget or whatever. And even, like, the acting and that kind of stuff, it just seemed like, I didn't realize that the stage show had come first, but after, I mean, it makes sense watching the movie, but I felt watching the movie like it was so much, it had that theatrical component to it that I was like, oh yeah, it makes sense why this would be a stage show.
Yeah.
That doesn't always happen. Like sometimes
you get cats.
Yeah, sometimes you get cats. Or you just get like, you can take a musical and make it a movie, but it's like the most recent one was like, I watched In the Heights and I love In the Heights. The musical.
Yeah.
And I like the movie too, but the movie is just, it's different acting. And it's like you, in the movie, they get people other than Anthony Ramos and some other people, but in the movie, they got people who are like pop singers to be the female leads, which I didn't really like. And then they were so noticeably different from everybody else when it came to the performances, because there is something to a theatrical performance. And that's, I feel like Rocky Horror has that in spades.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Yeah. That's such a good way to put that, Colin.
Yeah. Well, and I definitely like the style. Like, I love Brad. I think Brad has to be one of my favorite characters in this movie just because of his earnestness and how nonchalantly he says stuff like, I think we passed a castle 3 miles back. Like, you just drop the word castle into casual conversation. Like,
what?
Like, that should be like, wait, what did I just say? That's what that should be. You know, we've talked about the shitty remake a couple times, but still, like, I like the kicking the tires, and that's something that they duplicated when they did it on TV, because it's one of those fun, stupid little moments, but him kicking the flat tire, like, I don't know what it is, but yeah, I just love his earnestness. Oh, just go along with it. We'll abide by their customs. Things like that.
I was not expecting Brad to be so down with getting down with Frankenfurter once he realizes it's, like, it's him. I and again, it's more just because of the time. I was like, oh, here's your big, like, here's your big male lead. Like, he's gonna get all upset and fisticuffs and whatever, but, like,
yeah.
But then it also, I was like, I don't understand Brad and Janet's relationship. Like, I don't know what's going on. Like,
I agree. It seems like a very tumultuous relationship.
Do they love each other? Or,
I don't think so.
Like, what's happening there?
Well, like, the part where she says, I don't like men with too many muscles. Oh, burn on Brad, you know? Like,
yeah. Or even, like, when Brad goes, like, I'm Brad Majors and this is Janet Weiss. She's like, yeah. Weiss? It's like, how do you not know your partner's last name?
Yeah.
Like, stuff like that, that kind of just, I don't know, that was always the illusion to me that, like, they don't have, like, a very good relationship, or it's very almost, like, formal. Like, yeah. They're not fully comfortable with each other, so it's yeah. very much like this facade of, this is who I am perfect white man, and I am perfect white woman, and yeah. we have nothing else wrong with us, we are made perfect for each other, because we are perfect white man and perfect white woman.
But, like, even at the beginning of the movie when Brad is talking to his buddy who just got married and Janet catches the bouquet and he's all like, oh hey Brad, I guess it's gonna be you next. I was not expecting Damn It Janet to be the song that came next, because Brad doesn't actually seem like he's that keen
mm-hmm.
on getting married. I didn't expect yeah. like he kind of seems like reluctant, and then they immediately go into this engagement. It was weird to me.
I think it almost reminds me of, like, a whirlwind marriage or relationship where it's, like, they've been together for a while, seriously, but then, like, mm-hmm. these things kind of just, like, okay, well, people are getting married, so we should get married, too, or, like, these things should happen. And I think also going to the castle and stuff, it kind of flips what they think of love is on their yeah. on their head. Because, again, yeah. they think, like, okay, yeah, no, we've been dating because we've, you know, again, perfect, like, football boy and cheerleader girl in high school, and we've dated, and we've just continued to date, so we might as well just get married and stuff, so.
Yeah, this is the yeah. couple that John Cougar Mellencamp writes songs about.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, this is Jack and Diane.
Yeah.
It also seemed like the movie, I think part of the reason why the movie is so, like, it kind of throws you off in the first viewing is that once they hit the castle, they move from being kind of A players, like the main story, to like C players almost. Like, they're not really, they no longer seem to be the people who are moving anything along or like overly important to me. They're just yeah. kind of there.
Yeah.
They're not even really trying to solve their predicament as much as I could suss out yeah. either.
Yeah. No, like, seriously, where's that phone? I need the phone.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The phone does not come up again after, like, Rocky comes to life, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also have to say about Brad, he's got some great glasses acting. I've always appreciated his glasses acting. Whipping them off, putting them on. I mean, David Caruso on CSI Miami must have watched this movie a bunch of times, because, you know, there's two actors that know a thing or two about glasses acting.
I like it too, because I think both Colin and I know exactly what you're talking about when you say glasses acting with this film, but it doesn't take away, it almost adds to his character.
Oh,
just,
it does,
like,
yeah.
It's so well done. And even, like, you were talking about the tire and stuff like that, those are most likely choices that he made just while filming, and that makes Brad's character so much more rich, and, like, we understand him so much better, like, when he makes those little choices. So, like, those little, like, golden nuggets in there of just, like, yeah, glasses acting. Or, like, let's improv kick the tire. Like, yeah. It's so good.
But then his entire character gets dropped when, as soon as he gets some from Frankenfurter. Yeah. I mean, okay, well, we have to talk about Frankenfurter. And, again, like I said, I mean, I've seen this movie lots of times, but now that I'm watching it critically, man. More than ever was I blown away by Tim Curry. Absolutely just floored by Tim Curry. I thought he's a legend. I mean, there is no other way to put it. Like, he just oozes sexuality. And it's funny because I wrote in my notes at one point, and I think it was after his reprise of... you know, in just 7 days, I will make you a man, like, where he's talking about the tricep and the bicep. And there was something about how he looked that I'm like, now I get it when it comes to Mick Jagger. Now I understand Mick Jagger's sex appeal, because not only does Tim Curry look like Mick Jagger, but he struts like Mick Jagger. And I thought, you know, like, this observation was that I'm like, done. That's going in the notes. That's my observation. And then when I started doing research, I found out that Mick Jagger really wanted the part of Frankenfurter. He tried so hard to get Frankenfurter. And whoa. I think it's only because Tim Curry was on Broadway was the only reason that Tim Curry beat out Mick Jagger. And I'm just like, okay, well, they see it too then.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, he reminds me of, like, David Bowie in Labyrinth. Like, yeah. It's just like, you seem...
androgynous?
You seem androgynous, but you, like, ooze sex appeal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like...
it's like, I don't know what your leaning is, but, like, you ooze sex appeal.
Yeah. I mean, like, there's the one part where he's strutting across the room towards the elevator, and he's doing that head snapping back and, like, kicking at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And my thought was, ouch.
Right?
Like, I'm just like, that's gotta, like, you're gonna give yourself whiplash, but it's just, like, it's just so striking, and it's like, oh my god, walk towards me now. I want to see more of that. Like, give me more of that. I am in love with Tim Curry. After I love Tim Curry anyway, but just watching him so much more closely, like, I teared up for his last song. And I gotta say, I hardly ever tear up when it comes to a musical. For some reason, I just can't get that lost in a musical. I guess it's the very act of music that just takes me out of it because I find myself loving the songs. But I was so into I'm Going Home that I'm like, oh my god. Like, I've never realized how beautiful and magnificent and striking this performance is. And just all the emotion from him.
It's absolutely amazing because there can be scenes where... he is not technically like the forefront of the scene, but he commands every single scene that he is in, whether or not he's talking, whether or not he's actively participating. It is about Tim Curry. It is about Frankenfurter. And it is. And I mean, maybe it is the, you know, I think it's important to remember that he's had a long time to like focus in on this character because he's played Frankenfurter at least for a while beforehand.
Yeah, like two or three years before the movie, yeah.
So just to be able to, and I know even like talking about other Tim Curry movies, like apparently during It, like he was so in character that people didn't want to be around him once the camera was stopped rolling because he was so like in his character.
Yeah.
That, and you know, that's incredible. Like that's something that's, especially to be that commanding.
Yeah, that movie's not great, but he is.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. And Clue. Clue is another one where I love him. Home Alone, Lost in New York.
good.
I love Tim Curry.
Yeah.
But yeah, I found myself very attracted to Tim Curry on this viewing of this movie.
Yeah.
But like, even his entrance, like when he comes in, tapping his foot, you know, with those platform heels on and the cape and everything, and like throwing off his anticipation when his eyes bug wide just for a second. Like, he's just making so many great choices. But you know, the song when he does come in down the elevator, well, it's playing on a jukebox, guys, and you know, specifically it is a Rockola Selections jukebox, and that means it's time for Sponsorship Corner.
That was a tough one to shoehorn in.
So always on the lookout for product placements in movies. This week, the Rocky Horror Picture Show is brought to you by Rockola Selections Jukeboxes, the Plain Dealer Newspaper, which is an actual Cleveland, Ohio newspaper, and RKO Radio Pictures. Plus, a special shout out to the SS Titanic and Homemade Muscle Men. And this has been Sponsorship Corner.
Short and sweet one.
I
was thinking about that. I'm like, Sponsorship's Corner is going to be a tough one to weasel out some stuff, but...
Yeah, no, there were a couple. But man, the sequel, it's like littered with sponsors. Oh man, if we were doing that one, it would be like, whoa, they're all over the place in that one. that they finally realized, oh, this is the Rocky Horror guy. It's been 6 years. We've seen how much of a cult classic this is. Yeah, let's get our products in that one.
Yeah.
The one thing I was thinking about Rocky Horror is, like, just the power of something becoming a cult classic. And I wonder if, I don't know that you could make a cult classic movie today. Like, are there any movies that would happen today that would become a cult? Everything is too, like, mass-produced and well thought of before it gets created now.
Priscilla, Queen of the Desert was kind of the last one that I can think of that had, that I remember there being a following of. But
I know that one of my, actually, like, my all-time favorite movie is Scott Pilgrim versus the World,
right,
which came out in 2010. And that garnished much more of a cult following nowadays. And I think it's more because of the graphic novels than the movie itself. But
yeah,
I know that that has kind of garnished a cult following because it didn't do that well, or it didn't do amazingly in theaters or as well as it had anticipated.
Yeah.
And then within years following, it really brought up popularity. Like this year was the, or I guess last year was the 10-year anniversary.
Yeah.
So they had it back in theaters and it sold out. Like they had cast readings of the script again, and like thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people watched them, myself included. But, yeah, yeah. But you know, nothing to the standard of Rocky Horror.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's just crazy. Like 46 years of people like, like, I'm pretty sure the Garneau, is it every Friday or is it, like, one Friday a month?
Oh, no. They have? Yeah, no, it's only, like, one Friday in
during October. Halloween, yeah.
Oh, it's only once a year.
Yeah, so okay. That's why it's so incredibly difficult to get in and see it. I think they started doing a couple of showings, but, like, yeah, it's only, like, two, maybe, that they do during the month of October. It's craziness. Oh,
okay. Yeah.
Hmm.
I remember the Drew Carey show where they went to see the Rocky Horror Show, though.
Oh, man, Drew Carey's. That show is such gold.
Drew Carey was in his Brad costume, which was a boxers and tank top. but Ryan Stiles as Riff Raff was a pretty good thing to watch in that episode. So, well, okay, Riff Raff. So in this movie, it's Richard O'Brien, and I really enjoy the character of Riff Raff as well. He's such a good level of creepy, mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. It's funny that you mentioned Ryan. Like, I actually thought I was trying to feel like he reminds me of somebody. Ryan's, but now all I'm picturing is Ryan Stiles.
Ryan Stiles,
because I'm just like, oh yeah, he would. Ryan Stiles would wear that really well.
Yeah,
yeah.
But he gives me like a Uncle Fester vibe.
Yeah,
okay.
Like, you know the guy in Princess Bride who's like running the dungeon with the torture device, that weird looking guy, the albino.
Yeah. Yeah, or maybe if you've seen Young Frankenstein, Igor in that. He's definitely an Igor type character. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about Colin's favorite for a second. Let's talk about Meatloaf. Does Meatloaf actually play the saxophone? I mean, it's fitting that Eddie plays the saxophone, like the most sexual of instruments, you know, because it looks like a penis. But
yeah.
That's what a penis looks like, right? That's normal, right?
What a sexy recorder. Yeah. It's the sexiest of the phallic looking object or instruments.
Go. There you go.
Yeah. Anyways. I don't know. I think I wouldn't be surprised to find out that he did play it. I mean, I know he plays a lot of instruments, and like a lot of his music is like, he does have songs that are kind of have that more like brass band sound in the background along with the electric guitar. So it wouldn't be shocking for me to find out that he played it.
Yeah.
I love Meatloaf's hand tattoos. It's like love and hate. And it looks like it's been drawn on with like blue pen.
Yeah.
It's like, there's nothing there except for, yeah, it looks like somebody just went through. It was like, shoot, I was supposed to get these, like, I have tattoos for you, but we are running way behind. I just got to draw these on real quick. And like, that is what they did, is just took like blue pen.
Well, I like the cheapness of the special effect for him driving around in the lab, because it's just him holding a set of handlebars and being pushed in a wheelchair. That's how they did that.
Oh my god.
But yeah, I mean, he absolutely comes in and crushes, but then at this point, this is probably where Colin was like, okay, seriously, what am I watching, right?
Yeah, I didn't understand like what happens going forward. Like, I was like, oh, Meatloaf is on, and he sounds really awesome, and everything is good. And then
I don't know if I like, blanked out, but then he was dead.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well, that was unexpected. I thought he was going to be like a big part of this.
Yeah. It's interesting to think of this as skinny Meatloaf, though, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, poor guy.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, Eddie dying and also just like coming back to life from the freezer is definitely like the turning point. Everything up until that point is kind of straightforward. You're like, okay, weird lab, weird Frankenstein type boy man.
Yeah.
Who is this? Why is he dead now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like up until that point, it's just like, oh, normal people happened upon a weird house and weird things are happening. But then murder gets involved and it's like, it brings everything to kind of a weird place. A weirder place, I should say.
I've really never understood the point of Eddie in this movie, like, because it doesn't even become like a real driving force for Columbia, does it? Like,
kind of, I guess, because that's kind of like her last straw before she gets turned to stone, where she comes in and like, I loved you. Off.
Yeah,
you hear me? I loved you. Like all this stuff. But, like, even that, I think she's just kind of at the breaking point as it is. She doesn't seem like she's very happy either way. So, yeah. I mean, I think Meatloaf dying, Eddie dying is definitely, like, a contributing factor to that. But, yeah, there's not a lot of, like, I guess the only main reason why Eddie needs to die is for Dr. Scott to come around and be like, hey, you seen my nephew?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
But then even that, Dr. Scott still could have come without Eddie. Or ever being there. They could have just like alluded to him. I mean, but you gotta have Meatloaf in it.
Oh,
you know,
true.
If you know Eddie's gonna play Meatloaf, or Meatloaf's gonna play Eddie, you gotta have Meatloaf in there.
Yeah.
And also Hot Patootie Bless My Soul is one of my favorite songs.
It is good.
I did read that they were worried, like Richard O'Brien was worried about Meatloaf doing the part, and basically, you know, like, okay, well, here's the song. No one has ever gotten it right on stage. Don't worry about it. And he looked at the lyrics and went, what's the problem? And then like nailed it on the first try. And so, I mean, that's Meatloaf for you.
Yeah.
Consummate professional.
I wonder what John Stamos was doing in 1975, because he killed that song in Glee.
That's true. He
did also kill that song in Glee. John Stamos did a pretty damn good job.
But now, to go from killing to butcher, the song they butchered in Glee was Touch a Touch a Touch a Touch Me, and because they changed so many of the lyrics.
But
yeah. I read that originally Richard O'Brien was hoping that Susan Sarandon would do this song in the nude, and she's like, no. She had done nudity in movies before this point, but she said no, and it's just, I watch it and go, it's sexier without the nudity. Like, I don't think that would have been the right choice at all.
Yeah.
As hot as young Susan Sarandon is, I mean, I only know her Thelma and Louise and beyond, and I mean, in this movie, she's pretty dynamite.
I have this conversation with my fiance all the time, and I go, who is your, like, celebrity crush? And he goes, Susan Sarandon. And I'm like, yeah, young Susan Sarandon was hot. He goes, no, not young Susan Sarandon. I went, pardon me? Oh. Pardon me?
Okay.
And I was like, what does that say? Like, you have some weird taste. What does that say about me? But yeah, he goes, I love Susan Sarandon. And I did. I was like, yeah, young Susan Sarandon. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. No, not young. Oh, okay. Huh? So I guess she also ages like fine wine. I mean, she still looks pretty, pretty good for being her age, but I was mad.
Interesting. I mean, she doesn't like, I don't even, what was like, what, has she been in anything recently? I can't even picture her. I don't even know what she looks like these days.
I feel like I saw her in something recently.
I almost feel like Dead Man Walking is the last thing I saw her in, and that was like 20 years ago now.
I don't know if she was, I don't know why I'm getting pulled to like the new, or like the remake of Entourage.
Oh,
that
God.
Came out in like 2017 or something.
Hmm.
But I don't know. There was something that I'd seen her in recently where she was definitely not young. And it seemed like it was, it was like one of the Bad Mom sequels.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was thinking, I was like, it was kind of just like one of those shitty movies that's on like W Network. That's kind of it's okay. So that's why I thought Entourage. But yeah, no, it was like Bad Moms or something. It was one of the Bad Mom sequels. Yeah. And she's on that. And again, she's aging. She's getting up there, but she still looks pretty good.
I mean, good call on her to not succumb to the. I'm sure there was a lot of pressure to do the nudity, but I agree with Sean. I think that, like, for a song like that, well, I always think this on. I think this generally when I watch TV nowadays, I'm like, why do you have to? Like, there's something more like it's almost like it does the insinuation does more, or like it's like the tease is more alluring than like just actually like just throwing everything out.
Yeah, right? Let your imagination wander a little bit.
Yeah,
get the illusions or like those innuendos and stuff going. You get much more creative that way, mm-hmm. and it's not just like, yeah, here's my boob.
Yeah.
Look at it.
Look at it.
Look
I
at
said
it.
Look at it. Well, a couple other characters we haven't talked about, of course, are Dr. Scott, played by Jonathan Adams. I don't know, what do we think of our wheelchair bound doctor scientist guy?
I did not. This is a character that was complete, like, I did not know what to do with him. Like, he comes in and he seems, and then we get to the pool orgy,
and then all of a sudden I was like,
are those even his real legs? Like, it's just, I don't know.
They don't look like the legs that should be on that guy. Yeah,
I definitely remember watching that part and like losing my mind at how funny that was to me. I still think it's like one of those, it's like a cheap comedy thing, right? Like, old man bound to a wheelchair has really sexy legs now. Funny. Yeah. But it, like, especially because it came out of nowhere, like, I was like, what is this? What is this? I thought that was so funny. Like, so good.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, I think he definitely flips everything on. Like, okay, then now you're like, okay, seriously, what's happening? What's going on?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, then the other characters we have are Magenta, played by Patricia Quinn, and Columbia, played by Nell Campbell. I've read that on Broadway, the character of Columbia has been played by Joan Jett and Melora Hardin. So Jan from The Office gained some more singing.
That'd be, I mean, sure. Joan Jett would be interesting. I didn't realize that she'd done any Broadway work.
Yeah. I think we'd be surprised at who's done Broadway work, really. I mean, I have a feeling there's been a lot longer list than we would ever think.
Yeah, I agree. I think so.
Yeah. But yeah, and then we've got Peter Hinwood playing Rocky Horror, who has 4 total credits. He's now an antiques dealer.
Oh my god.
I wonder, so like when I watched this movie, probably my biggest question after it was, I want to know what happened to the statues. Like when they all get put in the Medusa machine and get turned into statues.
Yeah.
I want to know where those are.
Yeah,
and I was like, if I was acting in this movie, I would have like demanded to keep whatever one they made of me. I would just have it in my house somewhere.
Yeah,
but
I could have.
Nice entryway.
I googled, but it didn't sound like anybody kept theirs, and there's no record of where they are. But I'm sure they'll show up on some Hollywood props dealer soon enough. Maybe he has them.
Well, I read that he did have the gold underwear. And nice. sold it for like $10,000 in like 2009 or something like that. So, yeah.
I thought that they would go for more than that.
Well, they were antiques, right?
Yeah, that's true.
$10,000.
Yeah, for underwear.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't necessarily know that I would think they would go for more, but I mean, I guess with the fan base that this...
Yeah.
There just has to be some rich... like queen that just would love to have these.
Yeah. Yeah.
And our last character is Charles Gray, playing the criminologist, who this part was originally offered to Vincent Price.
Oh.
All right.
That would have been very good as well.
Okay, so Colin, I know we've kind of just jumped around and mostly just talked about, like, you know, a lot of LGBT talk here, but what are your questions for us about Rocky Horror Picture Show? I mean, it could be simple as to, like, why is Columbia wearing a Mickey Mouse hat? Which I don't know, but I think that's clever now that this is technically owned by Disney now.
Mm-hmm.
You probably watched the Disney Plus version, right?
I watched So I would have never thought this movie would be on Disney Plus for one, but I Googled to just see if I had to borrow it from Sean or if I could stream it somewhere.
Yeah.
And when I saw that it was on Disney Plus, I was aghast. I was just like, what?
Oh my god, this is just here?
But on Disney Plus, though, you did not get the bonus song.
Oh, I didn't.
No,
okay.
Because, yeah, at the very end, when the house takes off, there is a song called Superheroes, which is a very short song. But it's only in the UK version, which you can watch on the DVD. But in the Disney Plus version, they cut from them falling onto the ground outside the castle. That's where the song would be. But they cut right to the criminologist who does his little and crawling along the planet's face part. So that's
yeah.
So it cuts out about 2 minutes.
I guess like my main question is probably they're all like character questions. Like I don't feel like I really had time to get to know what a lot of the characters were about. So, like, with Frankenfurter, I didn't even realize he was an alien. I missed the whole alien story somehow.
Yeah.
But I was just kind of like, what? So he creates Rocky as, like, his love slave? Is that what Rocky's meant to be?
Pretty much. And then Eddie was the failed attempt at making a love slave.
Because
he was flabby.
Oh, Eddie was made too. Eddie, but how is Eddie made if Eddie has his uncle?
Who knows? See, that's where it gets complicated because, supposedly, or I mean, maybe it's the scar along the head. Did he maybe just modify Eddie? Is that maybe what happened? 46 years, I'm still confused too, I guess.
Yeah. And then, so there's that. Like, I with the pool thing, I didn't really understand it was half, like, it almost seems like everybody's in, like, he's put people under some sort of sexual trance that I didn't really, which maybe, if that's the case, then I guess that all makes sense.
Did but he it was drug also them just, at dinner, maybe?
Are they drugged?
I mean, I noticed in the movie for the first time that when Dr. Scott shows up and he's checking out the Zen room, that he picks up a roach in the ashtray. I've never noticed that before. And I'm like, oh, I get it, Zen room. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then we already talked about it, but my other question is just like with Brad and Janet's relationship.
Yeah.
Like, does that result? Like, how does the movie, I'm like struggling to even remember how the movie ends. Like, I just remember Frankenfurter getting shot by weird laser beams.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Maybe this is in the Disney Plus version, but then it just seemed like it kind of just, it just ends.
Yeah, well, see, that's where the other song would have been. So they let Dr. Scott and the others go because the mansion or the castle ends up taking off because it's actually a rocket ship.
Okay.
And they're just left lying there on the ground. So in like the burnt remains of the rocket ship taking off. Mm-hmm. It's an abrupt ending. It really is. Yeah.
And is there a backstory about the Transylvanians, like how they came to Earth and what their aims are?
No.
Or do we just not care about that?
But well, here's another fun one. Carly, are you aware of the other sequel to Rocky Horror Picture Show?
No, I'm not. Uh-oh.
There is a script. It is not it has never actually been put out on stage or on screen, but Richard O'Brien has a script, and it is Rocky Horror 2, The Second Coming, and it's it's about the old queen. And this script is available online. I could send you a link to this script.
Oh my god, yes.
It takes place.
Hold on. Before you go on. I must know, is coming spelt C-O-M-I-N-G or C-U-M-M-I-N-G?
It was spelt C-O-M in the one that I said, but I think the implication is still there, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, this story takes place on Transylvania, and General Riff Raff has come home, and he is being summoned by the Queen, who happens to be Frankenfurter's parent.
Hmm. And
I've only read like the first few pages. I only found this script today. I haven't had a chance to fully go through it, but I have read the first few pages. And apparently there is a character called Steve Majors in it who is trying to find out who these people were that caused his brother to go crazy. So yeah, he's the younger brother of Brad Majors. Janet is in it, but she is said to be approximately 35 years old, but looks like she's 50 because of her hard drinking, her hard smoking, her hooking that she does.
Oh my god!
It's a very bleak outcome for the Majors here, the Majors family here. So,
the major vice.
Yeah, Brad has gone crazy, and so yeah.
I mean, I feel like the Rocky Horror. I don't know how much you would want to mess with it, but it seems like there's a lot of loose ends that you could. There's a lot of mythology to explore, and yeah. Like. Maybe for the 50th anniversary, Netflix or somebody can make some weird TV show about it.
Yeah, or even if it was like a mockumentary style.
Or a mockumentary.
Yeah, like they go into like, who are the Transylvanians? Or like stuff like that. I think that would be cool. That would be interesting. Or even if it was something that just like, yeah, came out to like wrap up some loose ends. I think that would be a really interesting way to kind of honor 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I guess my last question, what is like your favorite song?
My god. Okay. I used to be like a karaoke host. Like I used to host karaoke and I used to also just like avidly go to karaoke. It was every Sunday was karaoke. And I always sang Hot Patootie Bless My Soul. So it's like one of my favorites. But then I also really, really, I think one that's underestimated is There's a Light Over at the Frankenstein Place. I don't think people give that enough credit. I think it's so foreboding. And like the melodies that come are just like so beautiful. Mm-hmm. Love it. Those are my two faves.
Yeah, I mean, I know for me, my least favorite is The Sword of Damocles. I've never liked Rocky's song at all. But yeah, before I started this, I would have probably leaned towards the Hot Patootie. Or even Damn It Janet, just because there's just something fun about that song. Mm-hmm. However, on this rewatch, There's a Light. Definitely, I appreciated that a lot more than I used to, because like that used to be, okay, yeah, here comes this song and we're going to turn on our flashlights, yada, yada. But like it really struck me how good that song is. But the one that absolutely floored me this time was I'm Going Home at the very end. I mean, I found a new appreciation and love for that song but after listening to the other cast recordings, only Tim Curry in this movie. I love this performance. But hearing other people sing it, they don't put the same heart into it. And that's what it is for me. It's the performance of that song. That one has swayed into my top, for now at least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Colin, did you have a favorite?
Yeah, I mean, I'm partial to Meatloaf, so I like Hot Patootie a lot. But I think, like, for whatever reason, even with the Glee version, I've always thought, like, Damn It Janet would be a really fun duet to perform with somebody. Yeah. Like, at karaoke or something like that. I think it would be so much fun. I really like that song.
Yeah. Well, there we go. That is the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Now, Carly, on IMDb, it scored a 7.4 out of 10 and has a Metascore of 65. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 80% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 85%. But, Colin, those are just numbers. Like Hot Patootie Blessing My Soul. That one was weak. Hit me with some reviews.
As you would expect with the movie of this stature, it was very difficult to even find. I don't think I found a single review that was under 5 stars. So the first one is from Soraya Darkside, who says, "Fun is not enough to describe this film. While best enjoyed with fellow time warpers in a theater, it is just as easily enjoyed at home in your PJs with a bottle of wine. The upbeat music and pure camp atmosphere of the film are paired perfectly with a masterful cast to create something truly transcendent that defies convention. Having grown up in a place where those of an alternative lifestyle weren't readily accepted, this movie allowed me to feel like I wasn't alone in the world. Introducing me to this film is the greatest gift my mom ever gave me."
Right on.
The second one I have is Sylvia Hollingsworth says 5 out of 5 stars. "This is, in my opinion, the best movie ever put on film. It has it all. Science fiction, drama, although over the top, sex, wonderful music, sex, comedy, sex, breaking social norms, and oh, did I mention sex? But none of it is done in a vulgar way. She says, I wouldn't have let my 5-year-old grandson watch this with me, and he thinks it's hilarious because the sex scenes are done in such a way they go right over his head. There's nothing like hearing your grandson singing Touch a Touch a Touch Me while jumping in muddy puddles because he associates I Want to Be Dirty with playing in the mud.
Oh, man.
Oh my God.
I thought it was bad that my kids knew the lyrics to, like, Don't Cry for Me, Argentina. And, like, it's... Wow, 5-year-old grandson singing Touch a Touch a Touch a Touch Me. Yikes. Yeah. I want to feel dirty. Oh my God, so many layers. Yeah.
This next one is from Olive Lila. She says, don't go into this expecting to understand anything. I have watched this movie many times and I still don't fully understand everything, but it's just so fun. I really think that it doesn't need an R rating. Yes, there is swearing and sex, but if I was 12, I would love this. My 6-year-old cousin loves this film. The pool scene goes way over his head, and he just thinks it's funny. The music is amazing, and Tim Curry is astounding. Would recommend to anybody.
Well, there you go. There's someone else that doesn't understand the movie. I think anyone that says they truly understand this movie is probably lying.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree. Let's see. I'll move over to Rotten Tomatoes here. Super reviewer Harry W. says, the Rocky Horror Picture Show is about as cult as it gets, without actually getting illegal. Taking into account the year it was released and the mostly unknown cast that were picked, the success of the film was phenomenal. Richard O'Brien writing the songs managed to do what seems impossible to most, writing a musical where all the songs are catchy and don't come across as fillers. The low budget works perfectly with the camp tone and is great for adapting the stage show into a memorable picture show. The film is definitely a spoof of B-movies, Hammer-style horror films, and a general tribute to giving yourself over to absolute pleasure. Tim Curry as Frankenfurter is quite something, and it's great to see fetus Susan Sarandon.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he definitely thought she was young. There was one song that was filler in this movie that they did cut, and it would have happened just after Brad and Frankenfurter hooked up, and it was some sort of introspective song that he sings. Hmm. It's out there. It's filmed. Yeah.
Nice. The last one I have is Thomas D. 4 out of 5 stars says, first time you watch it, it's going to be weird. Second time you watch it, it's going to be weird. Third time you watch it, you're going to be singing along. Fourth time you watch it, you're going to feel the serious charm the film cleverly packs in there, and it's going to keep you coming back to the time warp again.
I would have liked that to end with, but it'll still be weird.
Yeah. There we go.
Right on. Okay, right on. So, like I said, we've got 7.4 and 80 from audiences, 65 and 85% from critics. Carly, where does this fall for you? I think this is probably going to be quick and to the point.
I actually just, like, the more we've chatted about it, I think I'm going to rate it a little bit lower than I originally would have. Yeah. Just because I'm stepping back and taking kind of nostalgia and kind of that cult idea away from even just like thinking about my first viewing of it and being like, what the hell is going on? There's a lot of loose ends that need to be kind of like wrapped up. There's some things that weren't quite explained, but then of course just being so encapsulated with the just fantastical, campy, over the top world, I would give it an 83 out of 100.
Okay. Yeah, it's not a great movie, but it's the love for it that
pushes
yeah,
it over the culture top behind normally. It. So
yeah. Okay, nice. He can take a step back. Okay, Colin, what about you? What was your thought on Rocky Horror Picture Show? This is a tough one for you to judge, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I honestly like don't know. Like, I don't think I can give it a rating because I still struggle to comprehend it.
Yeah,
for lack of a better word, I think. The most I can say is, like, I enjoyed it. I just feel like I need a few more watches to really understand what's going on. But, I mean, I think if there is a place where it falls apart for me, it's a little bit of the story. Like, I don't think I understood what this story was.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. I liked all the performances, and I liked the movie. It was just kind of like the plot for me was a bit of a mystery.
Yeah. I think even after all these years, it is for me too. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I feel sort of the same as Carly is, like, taking the nostalgia out of it is one thing. And I mean, really, it's, yeah, if you take the nostalgia out, for me, this is like a 70% movie. Like, it's not a very good movie, but I enjoy the camp factor. I appreciate the fact that it is an over the top, and it feels, like you said earlier, it feels like you're watching a stage production rather than just watching a musical on film. Right, like it's mm-hmm. there is an aspect to that that I enjoy, and I mean the music, it's filled with bangers. I mean, I've been listening to the soundtrack all week, and really the movie one is the best soundtrack. But you know, I love the music, and so, but it's not a very good movie, but I love it. You know, it's that's the easiest way to put it. It's not a very good movie, but I love it.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. That is the Rocky Horror Picture Show, and that's our show for this week. Oh, man, a big, huge thank you to Carly Holm. Thank you for joining us this week. Always a pleasure, Carly.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I always feel bad cutting off a conversation that short, but like, you don't have any social medias to plug.
That is okay. That's the problem with being like a teacher. I'm like, yeah, please don't look at my social media.
you guys should, you can plug Elf.
Oh yeah.
Even though it's like a month and a half away, but still, yeah. Get the ball rolling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come see me and Sean be really quirky elves.
In the musical Elf, if you're in the Sherwood Park, Edmonton area. Absolutely. Right on. Well, thank you for joining us, Carly.
Thanks, Carly.
Awesome. Well, thanks, guys. It was a really good conversation. This is one of those movies that I could probably talk for like 4 hours about. Yeah. There's just so much shit to unpack. But yeah, no, it was awesome.
Yeah, right on.
Yeah, I feel like this is the type of movie that is best. Like, so my movie that is kind of on this line is Nacho Libre. Like, I know it's objectively not a great movie, but I love it so much because I watch it with friends who also love it, and I feel like Rocky Horror would be a lot like that. Like, I think I would love, I think I would learn to appreciate it watching with people who love it.
Yeah.
So if you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out on the business end is, well, there's a few things you can do. You can tell your friends. That's the easiest way. Share our posts. Tell people, because word of mouth is so important for a podcast trying to get noticed. Or you can use the algorithms and science of whatever app you listen to your podcast on and go and give us 5 stars in a review. Doesn't matter what you say in those reviews, but it's the 5 stars that they just help drive us up the charts and help us get noticed. Or if you're feeling generous and you want to donate to us, you can become a producer of the show and go to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne, become part of our Patreon community, and get a shout out, just like our current executive producer, Joshua Blum.
And be sure to check out our website, www.IUsedToLikeThisOne.com. There you can find fascinating info about me and Sean. You can find links to all of our podcast episodes, as well as all our social media. We have Facebook, we have Instagram, we have Twitter. If you want to reach out to us, you can do so by email at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com. Drop us a line and let us know what movies you used to like, and then maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show.
I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells, music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter in the Capitals anywhere you listen to music. Thanks for listening, and join us next week when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One.